Hello, welcome to the Friday, April 4th, 2014 edition of the Sands and its Storms and its Stormcast. My name is Johannes Ulrich and I'm the recording from Jacksonville, Florida. By the way, I will be in Orlando next week at the Sands 2014 conference. So if you happen to be attending and are interested in some Internet Storms and its stickers, I usually carry a couple of them around with me, just ask. But let's take a look at today's diary, and we have one by Boyan with the title, Who is Watching the Watchers? Actually, Mike Poor sometimes gives a talk by the same topic, also covering how to make sure your IDS is actually detecting something. And by something, we also mean something meaningful. We got a couple of great comments about this particular diary, in particular with links to tools that you can use to test your IDS, your IPS, one also for web application firewalls. One commenter pointed out that, well, I mean, he just has his users connect to the internet and he will see alerts. But that's sometimes just a problem. You're seeing too much alerts, and then of course you're not going to do anything about any of these alerts and you're going to miss them. Think about the target case. They had alerts that something was going wrong in the network, but they discounted them as false positives. So the real challenge here is that your analysts actually are able to focus in on the alerts that mean something, that are actionable, and that your rule sets are configured appropriately. And this is where these tools can help to identify any problems in tuning your rules, where you start missing some of these real alerts, or where your rules are too wide and your analysts are being drowned in false positives, which again leads to them not acting if they see something really important. And Symantec wrote up an interesting blog post about crypto defense. Crypto defense is one of the many crypto locker copycats that we have seen over the last few months. And in this case, the victim is asked to pay up about $500 in bitcoins in order to retrieve the secret key that was used to lock the files. Now, at first look, it looks like crypto defense is using pretty strong cryptography. It's RSA 2048-bit encryption. However, in order to create the encryption key, crypto defense is using Microsoft's own crypto infrastructure on the infected host. What this means is that the encryption key is actually still residing on the host and you don't have to pay up. Instead, you can just use the key that you already have on your system. CryptoLocker did this a little bit differently. CryptoLocker did not generate the key on the infected host, but instead just transmits the public key. And crypto defense actually makes it quite hard to pay up. You have to use Bitcoin, other payments are not accepted. And then to retrieve the secret key, you have to use a Tor-enabled browser. So you have to first install Tor, configure your browser for it and all of that. So pretty complicated. Nevertheless, according to Symantec, this particular group made $30,000 a month extorting users with crypto defense. And a few thousand users in Saudi Arabia were infected with new Android malware that specializes in stealing one-time passwords that banks transmit via SMS. This particular malware was targeting a number of banks in Saudi Arabia and claimed to be a banking app, but if you install the app, it will then forward the one-time password that these banks send via SMS to a phone number in Russia. This has become more and more popular in areas where two-factor authentication has become more established. Many banks do use SMS messages or little apps that you install on your smartphone, and as such, of course, they're susceptible of being intercepted in by malware that runs on the phone. And in this case, like in so many cases before with Android malware, actually there is no particular vulnerability being exploited here, but the user willingly installs the malware thinking it's something else. And a researcher from Poland did identify 30 different vulnerabilities in Oracle's Java Cloud Service. The vulnerabilities allow a user of Oracle's cloud to take over other users' processes or even read data stored in other users' databases. A lot of this is also then linked to breaking out of the Java virtual machine environment. Now, the issue that is being pointed out here is not so much just the vulnerabilities, but also the fact that Oracle uses a fairly old version of Java for its cloud service, and at this point apparently doesn't have a process yet how to deal with vulnerabilities. These particular vulnerabilities were originally reported at the beginning of the year in January, but only in March Oracle replied, essentially saying they're looking into how to fix them with no real timeline as to when they'll be fixed. Well, that's it for today. So thanks again for listening, and talk to you again on Monday. Bye.